Well, I'm the surgeon, not the butcher. Glad I didn't shut you down. Well, I don't care what anyone says. There's room for us both in this here town.
Welcome to Ideas and Identity.
Ideas and Identity.
We're here with, I'm not even sure I ever get your name right at all. Etoile?
Yes, Etoile.
Nice. And your last name?
Flemons.
Flemons. Yeah. Well, welcome.
Thank you for having me. I was like, is he going to make fun of me? He's a comedian.
Oh, yeah. Everyone's going to be laid bare, brought low here on... But no, this is, I'm trying to do something a little bit different. I feel like a lot of times when I'm listening to podcasts, everyone's trying to be, hey, jokey all the time, every time, catch you with the quip, talking over each other, blah, blah, blah. I'm doing the opposite, which is, this is just really authentic. I want to be really, have really authentic conversations about what people are experiencing in their lives, and I could branch out to what obstacles you're facing, what you think needs to be done in society, and then once we get done talking, we'll have some kind of idea of some little project to make.
Oh, cool.
At the digital audio workstation.
Digital audio!
But right now, I got no idea. I have no list or agenda of questions to ask. I just, the last week or two, like, how you been feeling?
I've been feeling really good, and really, just kind of, sometimes I overanalyze myself. Like, I'll be like, am I sucking right now? You know? And then if I say that I am sucking right now, then I beat myself up for a while. And then I'm like, no, okay. Let's just accept myself. How about I accept myself and find out, like, what's going on here?
What's the type of thing you'd beat yourself up over?
Are you asking that?
Yeah.
Probably productivity. So, if I had been, I think the scenario that happened this last couple of weeks was that I was running, production, and then I crashed.
Was it like a day you just did nothing at all then? Like,
yeah, my crash was, I think, 3 days of video games and food.
What video games?
I was playing,
I can hear you, I'm just going to turn the thermostat down.
There's three world builder games on the internet that I like to play.
Oh?
And...
World builder?
Yeah, you know, like...
SimCity?
No, not really SimCity, but, those games where you're like, do this task, and then do this task, and then do this task, and then do this task. Yeah, those kind of things.
On the phone?
No, they're on my, just on the internet, on my little
like website, and you build out. Are they like, well, is it, usually, I like games a lot, so we can talk about that. Like, choosing which game you're going to waste your time on, if it's a good enough game, you know, and I hardly count it as wasted time at all.
Yeah.
But it is one of those things you can beat yourself up over, because how productive would you be if you just never did anything you enjoyed?
Well, what I noticed is that my video games match how I really want to be. So if I really want to be productive, then I'm going to pick video games that are building games and production games and being productive and da-da-da-da and getting things done and goals and completing the goal. You know what I mean?
It gives you that little a serotonin push for completing something even though nothing is really...
Right!
Exactly. And that way the games seem like they're little creations meant to, I don't know what they're meant to be. They're fun. Mm-hmm. They're always just meant to make money.
Yeah.
But it seems like there could be this one computer, and it could be someplace like in Dallas, and there'll be 10,000 people building stuff that's only moving electrons inside that one computer. That's all that's happening, and maybe some small microtransactions. But meanwhile, spread out all over the land, there's these... people getting these brain boosts of having created something when just these tiny electrons are all that's being moved.
Right.
When, well, on the one hand, isn't it like we've created all these machines mm-hmm. that were supposed to eliminate the need for humans to do work?
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like we're not getting paid for it, but we found all these avenues to shove our energy into.
Yeah.
Lest we have to go out and constantly be actually modifying the real world,
right.
causing problems.
Yeah, really. It's like in the real world, a goal and the accomplishing of that goal takes time, whether it takes days or an hours or months or years. In a video game, it's like, okay, I'm going to grow this plant so that I can make this product in this factory, and then pretty soon I will get to level 38, which means I can buy this, and that can happen, you know, within the span of a week, you know, and pretty soon you have, like, an empire on the video game.
Yeah.
You know?
And then someone comes and smashes it in the middle of the night with some kind of name like Xuan Shui 773, and then it's like, well, if you want to be able to defend your tower in the middle of the night, it's going to be 350, you know, like, you better come up with 350 otherwise.
Yeah, I have never actually spent money on a video game, like, inside the game. Like, I've spent money buying video games, but not inside the game. I've never done that.
Well, it's probably pretty good. They're looking for the people that they can really get on the hook.
Yeah.
Well, I don't see any reason. I mean, it's better than staring at a blank wall. Like, for your brain, it's stimulating. Mm-hmm. Right? You're solving problems. You're... But, yeah, it's difficult to justify sometimes, even despite how enjoyable it is.
Yeah, I pretty much see it as my veg time. You know, some people's veg time is sitting in front of the television. My veg time is video games or pre-recorded TV shows with no commercials, you know.
Yeah.
Movies.
So, like, commercials. Like, I've gone completely no commercial. It's been years now since I've even watched one.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as, you know, how I watch my media content, is that... Like, why do you avoid commercials? Why not? Why not just stare at them all and let them...
Dude, I got serious PTSD from television, seriously. I stopped watching television in 2002. And the reason is because I learned how freaking jacked up you can get psychology-wise from media. And I was like, screw that. I am not... letting any of this BS get in my head. It's like...
But it's so harmless, though. It's just a couple little pictures that they...
I say through...
You know, obviously being coy to pull out your real thinking. Let me try and play the... play the uninformed interviewer.
Yeah.
Why? I can't even make this point, though. They're just really loud noises with a bunch of cultural programming for a bunch of... stuff that you made no choice to watch yourself.
Yeah, I've noticed a lot of people say, I don't understand why you get so upset with television at all. And I'm like, look at yourself. Look at how you act. Look at what you're buying. Look at how you see the world. Look at how you treat others. It's all based... It all has a base root in what the media is telling you you're supposed to be. And it's like, these people are like, well, I just ignore the commercials. Oh, it's just noise.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's just noise.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't bother me. It doesn't affect me.
I don't like the silence.
Yeah. It doesn't affect me. And I'm like, and how do you feel about yourself?
Yeah.
You basically hate yourself because you don't look a certain way. You don't have the right car. There's people walking around thinking they suck because they don't have a certain kind of job and a certain kind of house and a certain kind of car and a certain kind of body, you know?
Mm.
And it's like, you're freaking brainwashed.
If you really pick apart, like, some of the images, like, one of my... Even on the online ads now, it's gotten pretty... I find it just really disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
And then to think that it's multiplied a million times over... Mm-hmm. Well, like, the colors of people, like, if they're telling you to be aware of your, like, of identity theft, it'll be, like, a young white couple, you know, at the counter, and someone of color behind the counter, you know, he's handing the He's handing this black guy his credit card. He's right. Like, well, is it? But that nothing, no other statements. There's no other words on it. It's just like, you're right. Telling people to be afraid of
right.
People who are different than you.
Yeah.
Like, in all the stereotypes that are reinforced, I have a lot to say about this stuff like that. But then what if someone wanted you to be in a commercial and was like, for $3,000, you could be in this or that, you know, mm-hmm. advertisement here on local KC channels. Mm-hmm. And would you, but yes, I'm asking a question I know the answer to. Mm-hmm. I mean, but to the point is, like, you really, it's one thing not to watch them or not participate. It's another thing to be like, I'm not even going to participate, even if it would otherwise seem to be very beneficial to me. Mm-hmm. Like when, that's when the rubber meets the road. Mm-hmm. Like, you can say all day long, you don't like GMOs. But now there's a job that pays $75,000 a year for a consulting company that works for Monsanto, and your job is to go out there and just, you know, paint over your face mm-hmm. and say whatever the company line is. Mm-hmm. Now with that $75,000, you know, you could buy 2 houses
yeah.
and a boat.
Yeah.
And, you know, where you, some people, of course, you know, there's no question even asked. Mm-hmm. Others like myself, probably maybe yourself, you know, I couldn't live it. But yeah. It's a matter of conscience.
Yeah.
So then, so these systems that are out there, like the advertising system, you know, and we choose not to participate in them. What other systems are there like that? Are there anything other things that are similar that you can think of where you like a?
I think the whole entire idea of how business is run right now is old. I think it's a dinosaur, and it's going downhill. And I think that, like, even when you get into healing arts and you get into trying to help people and this and that and this, there are certain organizations and different kinds of healing modalities that are trying to use the old dinosaur business structure in order to promote themselves. And it works, but it works for the wrong kind of people that you want. For example, Goodwill and Salvation Army are companies that have always been thrift stores, and they, you know, their whole idea and their whole basis was to help people. It's like, come to our thrift store, get garage sale deals, we'll take that money that you spent here and we'll use it for something good. Well, it has turned into a corporate structure. The people that work at Goodwill are treated like crap now.
The prices go up.
Prices are up. You're going to spend Walmart prices at a Goodwill now.
$4, $7 for shirts sometimes.
You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Second example would be the different healing arts. I practice shamanism, okay? There are people trying to use the old dinosaur business structure of advertising and marketing to market their healing, whether it be Reiki or shamanism or life coaching, those type of things. And it works. You know, you do get your name out there. You do end up with clients. But those clients that you're ending up with when you're using an old structure of market, flash, bright colors, blah, 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 all of that
mm-hmm.
is drawing in the same people that would go out and buy a certain product because they think they're ugly.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's coming from the wrong place.
It's coming from the wrong place. So what happens is that these people who are trying to help people get these people, and they might help them, and it might be great, but there also is a lot of, your product didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm suing. Mm-hmm. I want my money back. Blah, mm-hmm. blah, 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 blah. And they're going to attack the healer as if they are a regular product from Walmart.
Yeah. They can just take it back.
And yeah.
There's no participation required. They have to sit there passively.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no.
It's an old system, and I think it might work in certain areas of the world and certain areas of business, but I don't think that if your goal is to really help people, then I don't think that Sunday, come on down, we're gonna deal for you. Look how beautiful
Reiki,
I am. Yeah, it's
the
like
the biggest Reiki healing wizard in the world.
Yes, it's like. I'm so gorgeous. I'm so healthy.
Yeah.
Why? Uh-huh. Because I'm a Reiki practitioner. Blah, blah, blah. It's like, get Reiki for me and you'll be gorgeous and healthy too.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, what are you really selling?
You know?
Mm-hmm. At that point. I really wonder. So, but there are things, like you said, that works for.
Maybe
car sales.
Yeah.
When I find a plumber, you know, I don't see any problem with, mm-hmm. you know, like, I don't see any reason why I'd want to be watching like a drama or a comedy and then something that'll be interrupted by someone who wants to sell me plumbing services. So that's what one of the subtle things they sneak in. Like, I have a magazine with an advertisement, put your services out there, make yourself really presentable. But the same, I would say, applies to art. You know, there's no, like, say, there's some artists, like, say, Thomas Kincaid, are you familiar with his glowing paintings or whatnot? That's one model for what it means to be a painter. Mm-hmm. And, but so what does he do? His name, Thomas Kincaid, plastered everywhere. His name, over again. Self-promotion. Stores spread out all across the country with replications and
There's
copies.
There's Thomas Kincaid stores.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All over the place. And all the stuff that he's selling, you know, this is now print. Oh, I got print 275 of this painting. Mm-hmm. And you're supposed to, you know, the whole idea of it being a special... Mm-hmm. Like, heirloom is really a joke at that point.
Yeah.
When it's that...
It becomes like collecting Beanie Babies.
Yeah. And it's, you know, do you really look at this painting, or do you just want to tell people that you have a Thomas Kincaid?
Right.
And then it's... Then what,
it
what,
becomes a brand name issue.
Right. You're branding yourself with someone else. It's name dropping. This keeps coming up more and more. And I think it applies to both of the things that both of those... Both these aspects of advertising, it's this vicarious. Mm-hmm. People are living through other people. It's not their own experience that they're chasing. Mm-hmm. It's almost as if they're living their lives through the people who are observing them, mm-hmm. Kardashian style. Mm-hmm. There's this whole like House of Mirrors effect mm-hmm. going on there. Mm-hmm. I wrote a song a long time ago about it. Watching you watch me,
yeah.
Watch you watch me see. And we watch ourselves watch each other and wonder what we see. It sure really is quite nice of you. But, it, you know, it's... And that's where we have problems with the second guessing. And if you're trying to build an alternative. You spend all your time, like myself, trying to build an alternative to these types of circus, carnival, you know, evil clown marketing situations. Then when you find yourself, though, in that world, momentarily, once again, it can be like you feel like you're in a pool of sharks a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're not going to be... And I wonder... Like, I recently got fired.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about the people in that office, mm-hmm. you know, and I didn't feel like I fit in there, like, whatsoever.
Right.
You know? I felt like I was surrounded by 1990, maybe... The late 90s, early 2000s, or something like that, and like, mm-hmm. and like everything felt like it was moving in slow motion.
Mm-hmm.
But then I look around at the people around, and I think that they were, well, like a lot of people caught up in that.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if once people decide that you're not playing that, or that you're different.
Yeah.
If there's something that at a very primal level alarms them, mm-hmm. just about you,
yeah.
and threatens them.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't be able to explain it to you or say why, but they mm-hmm. definitely act on that impulse.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And what, I don't know, I wonder if, you know, Gandhi, you know, Jesus, Buddha himself, mm-hmm. you know, could survive in a standard American cubicle.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. They would have to be so zen... That, and so mindful, like full of mindfulness and zen, that nothing would bother them. Like, Like, you would have to be able to shut off all triggers.
But their peace and their separation from the reality around them would be ganged up on for one reason or another. They wouldn't even know why. Some people would say things about them behind their back.
Yes.
And all the while thinking that they're saving the business and, you know, making sure.
Yeah.
I mean, not to compare, I don't mean to compare myself in that way. But I really wasn't bothered by these people. It's not like they're irritating me.
Yeah.
I thought everything was fine, but they already found something with me, but they wouldn't even.
Well, there's definitely like a shadow corporate structure and a shadow office politic where it's like the people in charge of who stays and who goes are in like this clique, you know? And so even if the person is an amazing worker, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh my God, that person just totally annoys me. Did you see how he just like came in and did his work? Did you see that? That was so annoying. You know what I mean? And so since that person is in connection with the person in charge of who stays and who goes, then they get this little clicky thing going on, and pretty soon someone's gone for no reason. Mm. You know?
I mean, I was aware of it. I mean, it surprised me, but a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like it was New Year's Eve, and, you know, I'm thinking we're getting up early because it's a holiday and whatnot, you know. And I think, and they're not going to fire me on a holiday. They would have certainly done it before now, whatnot.
Right.
So, but then it's to their advantage to always be surprised you as much as possible. So it protects them from liabilities and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And also to not tell you why. But the whole 3 weeks prior, I was trying to be positive in my head. My gut was telling me something's off here.
Yeah.
These people are not trying to be my friend.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, there's not anything to do for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not being helpful.
Mm-hmm.
They're clearly not very vested in my development.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't just people who would have known, though. It was like, it's kind of like being an invisible person a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you're not real or, but somebody knew. There was some kind of groupthink behind the scenes. That's not, you know, I don't spend too much time there thinking about that because it's boring to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's just recycling the same thing. Oh, why do all these people who don't like me not like me?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like the superpower I wish I had. If I knew exactly the reason why people don't like me, don't like me. It's one of my stand-up comedy jokes. I'm throwing stand-up comedy. That'd be my superhero power would be that, and I would call myself a borderline for personality disorder. And then I could have really good arguments with myself in the shower.
Right.
Finally, I'd be able to relive the past perfectly and win that argument. You know,
that's like a no win. That's like trying to please somebody that's unpleasable.
Yeah,
you know, it's like don't read your own news.
It's one of the questions I would ask some people who there are people that I admire who've had some success in comedy or acting.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really. You know, I've always had questions about the craft and whatnot, but I wonder when they were early on, when they were getting like spotty gigs here and there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this gig in Las Vegas once or twice a year or something like that. Or how did you tell the people that you're working at your normal job that you're going to go off and do this super other awesome artistic thing, and then keep that balance? Because pretty much I feel like every place I ever worked, if I would tell them that I have all these other artistic ambitions, podcast notwithstanding, all included, then they would just be like, oh, you can't take this job seriously. You know, you're not one of us.
Yeah.
You have your own agenda.
Mm-hmm.
That's the question I have. How did you maintain an 8-to-5 job or a job that can pay your rent?
And I think that's a
transition.
That's a big problem in the shadow corporate structure. You know, it's like, oh, you're not going to be our slave. Well, then you can't work.
Derek Jensen, one of my favorite thinkers, says says this. He might have got someplace else. I don't know if it's his original quote, but the system allows you to. You can have anything the system offers, so long as you don't ask for anything the system doesn't offer.
Yeah.
Which is a trick of the authoritarians. You know, they'll put certain things off the menu when you ask for them. That'll alert them that here we have somebody who's outside of my control, which I think is what a lot of it boils down to, that I can't control someone.
Mm-hmm.
That goes across your family and you know, romantic relationships. A lot of people in our society,
yeah.
I don't think, are comfortable or want to get involved with someone if they don't feel like they're the one that's in control totally.
Mm-hmm.
And we, there's all the domineering men thing. They want
yeah.
a woman to get a, there's all the domineering women thing.
Yeah.
They want a guy who,
yeah.
And then
yeah.
the,
yeah. And that whole, I think that whole control thing is all about fear. You know, it's all about like, you know, thinking that control is necessary to survive, and it really isn't.
Hmm. What? I mean, how could anyone really in our society feel like safe and loved and part of something? Like I would, I from the way things are just built, if I hadn't experienced it myself, I would also expect people to act this way,
mm-hmm.
because we're it's our society is standoffish. Nothing is community oriented.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is mine. This is
yeah.
mine. That's yours.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we'd have to fight. And if you compare that to like the tribal society out of which we came, where everyone like trusted their elders
mm-hmm.
and you know and, their, and lived close with their family and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
whereas now nobody lives with their family, nobody has trusted elders, or very few people. I do because I've chosen them
mm-hmm.
and made gone out of my way to seek the counsel of people I think are as I you know as you clearly have as well. But like the control comes out of the fear
yep.
that from a base state of being threatened, I think.
Yes. Yes.
You're going to run out of gas. You could lose your job.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one who's going to take care of you if those, if you
right.
lose your house. There's no
right.
structure. Everything is just free fall
yep.
for you. And so, yeah, well, then you're going to get very territorial.
Yeah.
You're going to get very judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to operate most of the time out of the fear.
Yeah.
So then people like ourselves who are then aware of this, we try and navigate society, and it looks to me to feel it's like a minefield.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's not just like, oh, we can work this out, oh,
mm-hmm.
we can find a bat. No, it's like, yay or nay, doors slamming shut,
mm-hmm.
get out of town,
mm-hmm.
I can't deal with you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the more, you know, if you think of people keep coming across the doors that are shutting in front of them and people that are closing them out and not accepting them, I think that that's just kind of a blessing because it's like, okay, so obviously this route has a bunch of closed doors. Let's go to where people are accepting.
Yeah.
Let's make a structure where people are open to living a life where fear isn't the factor of why we do things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like fear does not need to be the reason we do things.
Yeah. So it's not an acceptable motivation. And then, but how do these people even, how do you get people to bring people to that realization? You know, like,
I think people are already waking up to it, but I think that it's a very slow process because we've been in this fear-based, especially America. America is based on fear. We were founded on fear, you know. So, but it's going to take a long time, but even today you can see how people have organized things and got together and created things where, you know, that help people and help themselves that the system doesn't provide. I mean, it's everywhere. We've got people working on food, we've got people working on healthcare, and I think it's just a slow process. I think that, you know, the people that are awake to the idea that fear doesn't need to be the reason to do things, to, you know, be the foundation, I think that those people eventually find each other and come together, and they create. It's like as soon as you latch on to somebody that feels that way too, then that can be a creation, and then pretty soon more people are coming, and it just grows and grows and grows.
It's a really good way to put it. Let's say we're trying to build. I no longer believe in this system, so I'm trying to build the replacement with
mm-hmm.
everything that I do. And of course, not everything needs to be torn down. You know?
Right.
It's really maybe just like an inner rejuvenation or rejiggering of
mm-hmm.
inner directions of energy.
Mm-hmm.
turning, you know, things that are predatory into things that are cooperative. But you're right, you have to find the people, like, so I wrote this in my blog the other day, like, just being a human, I'm not really a humanist, oh, all of us humans are a big team, let's team up and dead. No, I really don't feel that. Like, I'm really on the side of people who demonstrate a belief in ideas that I share.
Yeah. And that's how everyone is, and that's why a lot of times you just have to agree to disagree, you know?
While really looking for the people that you agree with.
Right, exactly.
And then once you...
Exactly.
There's a... But, you know, it's like the... just finding a common basis where, you know... Mm-hmm. Well, and also, like, isn't that one of the big problems then? That there we have a whole country, we can't agree on, like, even the first thing.
Actually, the problem with that right there is that the media and the propaganda has told us that we don't agree. The truth is we agree. But the media and the media and the media and the shadow behind the media
always focusing on the division.
Is focusing on the division, on the constant. And so we think we're enemies with everyone in our neighborhood, but we're not.
Yeah. I think they did that study about bills that passed Congress, and they found that all the things that have like 70, 80, 90% approval rating across the country never even get into Congress to be voted on. And meanwhile, all the stuff that they do vote on, tremendously unpopular, 60, 70% against a lot of the bills. And there's no way then to agree on a law, because there's like everything they pass is like 100 laws. And a lot of them are really complicated.
Right. So, like, one act for environment might have a line in it on page 35, paragraph
350.
50,
you know, like,
56, that has a statement, oh, this environmental act will also say that your child must be in this place at this time during blah, 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 blah. It has nothing to do with the actual act. You know what I mean? It's like, it's so sneaky and corrupt that kind of stuff, that kind of shadowy stuff like that is, I believe that eventually it's going to fall, because that kind of sabotage and sneakiness is based on hurting and feeding off the very people and foundation that support it. Mm-hmm. So what happens is if you imagine a person, and the brain of that person has all these shadowy, sneaky, corrupt things going on, and their function is to stay in power, keep the fear going, blah, 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 have the most of everything, blah, 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 blah. What that does is that if you can imagine that as a person, that person would actually be eating their own feet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that system that's going on right now is going to fall, because it's self-destructive.
There is, I wonder, I mean, a lot of people talk about this, you know, like Derek Jensen says that the city, a settlement becomes a city, the point at which it requires external resources to be imported in, and our society is based upon that. And you think about the immigration, the United States is preying upon people from South America and Mexico for servile, low wage, basically slavery labor,
right?
Which is, you know, we'll give you $5 an hour,
right?
But, you know, but it's way cheaper for them actually than having to house their slaves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we have a system that's, I would say, worse than slavery,
mm-hmm.
and more exploitative even than slavery,
mm-hmm.
right now. And that's one of, like, if there had been no immigrants in the United States in the last 30, 40 years, this would have already happened. Because there's constant influx from this huge reservoir of unrest in South America, they have a recycling exploitative labor pool that they can. It's so evil. I can't. Plus the drug war on top of it, which it all goes together with. That's how it's managed to do it. And a lot of people say it's become so efficient, and even, you know, they're going to start using artificial intelligence to help plan this stuff out. Not in, you know, how many immigrants do we need a year? How many do we have to, like, how do they determine how, who and when to do an immigration roundup? It seems really weird. I personally think it's like computer algorithms. They know the labor pool that they need, and they know the wages that they want to maintain, and they know how that applies into how much your chicken fingers cost at Walmart.
Yeah.
To that level. Well, the people at Walmart know that. They've calculated the supply chain out that much. So we have something that's so monstrous. It not only can camouflage itself to make, you know, like immigration policy look like something we're going to solve for 20 years, like, right. we're really trying, you know. As if, ever since I was in high school, it's been, what are we going to do about all these Mexicans? And constantly, you know, Ron Paul, what was the other guy? Ross Perot.
Yeah, that's, I think that's all a cover-up, because obviously, just as you said, it's basically a necessity to keep the system the way it is.
Well, I'm not... You know, I want to believe... It's a Babylonian system. It's based on Babel. It will eventually come to the point where words have no meaning, which is, it's the same... That's the same culture. When you say that we're going to have a system that's based only on bribery, and we're going to say whatever it takes to get the most bribes. Eventually, you're going to have no values whatsoever, and everyone's just going to be stabbing each other in the back. Like, you have mothers basically stabbing their own children, 10-year-olds in the back for percentages and stuff like that. Eventually, what you have. But if our system is so efficient, they seem to be aware of this. You know, the people who... they did a study on the attitudes of people who are in corporate boardrooms, and discovered that a lot of them are actually anarchists. Once they're at the boardroom level, they ignore hierarchy, besides maybe who has a bigger yacht. But there's no boss or anything like that. They operate on like a team, we're going to work together, I'm not ordering you around, it's all collaborative.
Yeah.
So they actually know more efficient ways. So I say they, the powers that be, the 1%, have you... They operate on some pretty advanced social paradigms, I think, that they don't share with other people or are simply unspoken.
Yeah, so it, basically, if you looked at the entire human race as a huge person, and the 1%ers are up at the very top of the brain, if the people around the feet area of the giant human race acted like the 1%ers at the top, then there would be a change. But right now, right in this moment, I mean, people are changing. People are waking up. People are understanding that right now. But it's so slow that you don't really see a massive change right away.
Compared to how fast geopolitics is changing, you know, the conflicts that are arising with China and Russia, like the multiple states that have been overthrown in the Middle East without any consistent historical narrative that we're just supposed to believe happened spontaneously to benefit the interests of Israel and the United States. Like, meanwhile, back here, we're trying to have some kind of really slow motion. Well, we're doing the best we can, and everything seems in slow motion. A lot of the people who are in these fear-based paradigms are dying. And a lot of the younger people aren't with this stuff and are going to understand a lot of the stuff that we're talking about. But compared to the speed at which that the people at the top are moving, it's really all up in the air. I don't mean to be discouraging. But our goal is not, like you said, it's not a really powerful idea to me the other day that really helped me, you know. the way you said it was pretty awesome, too. You said, let me see if I can do a 12 impression. You said, at the dance jam share, you said, say I was going to get upset about, I don't know, recycling. Doesn't do anybody any good for me just to sit here and have emotions about it. How'd I do?
That's great, man.
It's a good quote. It's helped me, you know. I need to get a plan together with recycling, but I'm not gonna have sit here and fret unnecessarily. That's a way to be, and you really have been an encouraging person in that regard. My life over the last couple of months. So thank you for that.
Thank you for that. You're encouraging me. I got rid of my couch because of you. my living room's amazing.
Nice. Way to be. So yeah, where we help each other, we, you know, give each other little nudges where we, you know, are a little rough around the edges, you know.
Absolutely.
And that's when it's working right, you know, on a good day. And right. You can then, the biggest threat, I think, right now to global authoritarianism, global capitalism, whatever you want to call it, is I think people trusting each other.
Absolutely.
Actually have friendship, which you can just
absolutely
say. Basic, plain old, I trust this person, they wouldn't have said that about me, they're my friend.
Absolutely.
Because we spent time with each other, because we know each other, and have cared to know each other. And so a lot of what people call friendship, you know, it's really very shallow these days, but it's that deeper level of having a real connection and a bond with somebody. Because there's not going to... Because then all their tricks don't work. Mm-hmm. All their little... They need atomized little bots that work inside their little world.
Yeah, it's like every time we call bullshit on the message, be afraid. Every time we call bullshit on the message of you're different and you're enemies, you know.
Yeah, that's the last thing they want, right?
Yeah.
So when I say, like, you know, I'm neutral in the war on terror, they won't even let me. They wouldn't let me on TV to say my viewpoint. You know, I don't believe it's a real thing.
I actually don't believe it's real either.
There's no war on ideas. There's no such thing as terrorism. You can't define this word for me without describing yourself. And the United States has, you know, nuclear missiles it uses to bully other people for political reasons.
Yeah,
it's exactly the definition of terrorism in the book.
Exactly.
And we want to go out on some hunt for everybody else.
Right.
But these are dangerous. I mean, once you start pulling the scales out of people's eyes, they're not just going to, you know, be like happy and whatnot. No, you're the terrorist now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, let's see, like, how do we define terror? I mean, just like in there was a Michael Moore movie where...
Bowling for Columbine.
Yeah. Is that the one where he went to the peace group where they have cookies? They meet like once a month and have cookies. But they're actually like considered terrorists in the eyes of
probably
FBI or CIA or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I don't understand why we're terrorists. We get together, we bake cookies, and we talk about how to help the world, you know? It's like...
Yeah. I went to the Rainbow Gathering this year. Are you familiar with the Rainbow Gathering?
Mm-hmm.
I was confronted by, you know, at least 7 or 8... undercover police officers. Obviously, they're all over the place. There was probably 1,000 people at the gathering. They had sheriffs there that were disguised as forest rangers. There's just all these old guys walking around with, had no business there, with big sunglasses on.
Yeah.
Young people too, you know, just people. But yeah, it was really strange for there to be like, you know, and they were asking me questions like, so what's everybody doing around here? You looking for missile silos?
No!
This guy's wearing like a cowboy hat. You know, there's some missile silos around here. I think we can go find. Like, I was like, dude, I'm tripping balls. You know, like, and by this big teepee. You know, we're
right.
And this is Lakota Holy Land. We're having like all these spiritual things with the Indians, and and I'm like, dude, these are just people who like to camp.
Right.
We take camping really seriously. We like to be out in the woods. There's nothing more there. I was like, wait a minute.
I know.
And he's...
I know, dude.
That dude is not just some cowboy who wandered in. Yeah, later he turned out to be one of the sheriffs who was impersonating the Forest Service. So he had, like, multiple personalities.
Yeah.
I made a joke. I wouldn't trust that guy even if he was here with all 12 of his grandmothers.
Right!
Like,
right.
I don't believe anything about him, you know? Nothing at all. He's... And they're, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it was like $200,000 they spent to politically police a gathering.
I know.
That we probably spent together, including gas money, to get 2,000 people there, you know, $10,000 maybe.
Yeah.
The whole, you know, yeah. They're afraid of peace, love, and harmony.
Yep.
And any groupings together for the assemblies. I say they, you know, the power structure. It's all the power structure.
Yeah. But, you know, it's sad because, you know, that sheriff goes home and he knows.
Yeah.
He knows that there ain't nothing wrong with that gathering. Mm. I'm just doing my job.
Right. Yeah.
I'm like, how many other horrible things happened on Earth just from someone saying, I'm just doing my job?
Yeah. Isn't that was the Nuremberg defense. Nuremberg defense, wasn't it? I don't like to always compare things to Nazis, but I really would rather just forget World War II entirely at this point. It's overanalyzed. But, almost all of the bad things, the worst things are happening because people think that it's their job to do so, and they were told to, and have to, not almost all the bad things, but a tremendous amount.
Yeah.
Man, gosh, where are we at here? We're looking down the deep abyss of human geopolitics.
Yeah.
But I like to do that. It's great to have someone who will go on a little journey. But we were like, it's like, oh yeah, and I agree with you totally. And that's totally what I think. Oh yeah, well I think something even wilder. No way to be. Huh. But I wonder then, so what can we do to do today? You know, like where are we at? Where are you at with this stuff? You know, like, what are the big obstacles that you're facing then as you're trying to be this change? If I have a pre-prepared question, that's it. Tell me about your obstacles.
Yeah. So, if we're talking about all the stuff we've been talking about so far, all I know is that the only thing I'm responsible for is myself. And so if I change myself, if I stop believing the BS, if I make a life for myself that does not support the BS, if I do that as much as I possibly can every day, then I'm changing. I'm helping to change the world. And if everyone does that, then it's going to be changing the world, you know? So, the problem I have with not supporting the BS is I really like Snickers. I really like Snickers. I like a lot of the I like a lot of the candies that are like, you know, less than a dollar to like $1.25 or whatever. But all that candy is made from either slaves or child workers in other countries. And it's like BS. It's like a wall. Don't buy that candy anymore. Just don't. Mm-hmm. Don't buy it. There's other ways to get awesome chocolate. You know, it's like every once in a while I'll be like in the store and I'll be kind of hungry and I'm like, oh, that Butterfinger looks really good.
So when you're thinking about something to eat, is it your stomach that decides or is it your mouth that decides?
Probably my mouth.
Yeah.
My mouth. But recently I've gotten a lot better and picking like, you know, oh, it's like I need protein right now. Oh, I need veggies right now. You know, stuff like that. But, yeah, it's definitely taste.
Kind of think that with things that are so sweet and they're, you know, they're engineered to like, taste overpoweringly good, and also like 10 minutes later to give you like a boomerang craving for that same taste again. Chips do that really good, like MSG, you know, like the chocolate that's in like a Snickers bar. I'm not sure if it's even chocolate anymore, like to what extent it's some engineered product that may or may not have some original element of chocolate in it.
Right.
Like I said, it's a peanut. It probably is a real peanut in there. I don't think they have, like, fake peanuts in the Snickers bar.
It's probably a Monsanto peanut.
I like cookies. It's my weakness. I always want to have chocolate chip cookies or snickerdoodles, peanut butter cookies. But I started having some problems with rashes because I think it was all the yeast. You just can't. Mm-hmm. With beer, too, it would be the same thing. And I used to, those would used to be some of my favorite things. But when I'll be sitting here at night and I'll be watching a show, and I'll have this craving. I'll be like, am I hungry? Could I eat like a chicken sandwich? And I'll be like, no. Am I thirsty? Do I want some water? Do I want some? Nope. And I think, what about a Snickerdoodle? I go, yes. Mm-hmm. Not just one, though. Like 50 Snickerdoodles.
Right.
What is this craving for? Exactly. If I want, like, is there any number of Snickerdoodles that would be enough? I want to go back to my old habits and get one of those $4 boxes of Snickerdoodles from the bakery.
Right.
And then eat half of them tonight.
Yes.
Is what's going to happen. I know, but they say that know yourself. It's like the key to so many things. Like so then I say, okay, I'm not really hungry. I crave, like, refined sugar.
Yeah.
That's what I'm really craving.
Right.
And it's not a craving for food that's dietary in any way. That's a drug craving.
Right. Exactly.
It's a craving for some kind of euphoria that I can eat when I'm eating. It's so subtle because it's compared to other drugs, when you're on it, you hardly know.
Yeah.
There's no, you might get a little sugar rush or if you have a lot, but you really notice it when it's not there a lot more. It's similar to the way to nicotine if you've been on cigarettes for a few months after you've had it for a couple of months. And these things were, you know, I think it should be, if you identify a chemical that's like that, like it needs, that's a warning label. You know? This has a boomerang effect. Like you have this and then an hour later, your body, your brain's going to tell you, contrary to all reason, that you need more of this stuff.
Yeah.
So when you sell that, it's like it used to be like in olden times, like in the Bible, what is it, digging a pit for your neighbor? That's what they call it. There's a whole type of law. Where it's like they compare it, this type of thing you do to somebody is as if you had dug a pit in the middle of this road where you know they'd go.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And then you stand by there and wait for their cart to break down. Then you show up, and it's a form of product that's tied in with a trap.
Yes,
as well.
Yeah, so there's a lot of product traps out there right now.
Banks. We get started with banks, insurance companies, 0% APR financing with $1,000 cash back.
Right.
And then that's the type of stuff where you're not doing business. You're preying on people. And that's at a very fundamental level. I would like to see that made illegal.
Yeah, it needs to be illegal because it's a crime. It is. It's actually a crime. And what's sad is that, you know, the regular person on the street that's like, you know, trying to keep in an apartment, just trying to keep a job, you know, if they do something similar, they're in jail.
Yep.
You know. So it's really a jacked up system right now, and I think that you know, everyone taking responsibility for their own change is basically, and you know, helping others change too if they're asking for help. So the other obstacle I have is when I don't have a lot of money and I need to eat, it's like, okay, Walmart, where I could afford stuff, or the regular grocery store that's probably going to be a little bit better for the world if I shop there, you know. Or you take the whole idea of organic eating and stuff like that. It's like, man.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of, if you had enough money, you could eat completely organic and completely, you know, humanely treated meat and stuff like that. And I know that there's a way. There has to be a way. And there's a lot of people that have found that way. It's like, you know, it's like, oh yeah, I don't have a lot of money coming in, but I'm able to still eat organically and still eat this way and that way. But I think that my mental trap is this idea of, it's like, oh, but I can stock my fridge at Walmart. You know, I can buy 4 things at this organic place. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's like, okay. So it's just really a mind trap.
Where you can go round and round in circles and beat yourself up no matter what you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see. That's a tough one. And I know what you mean. And, well, like, not shopping at Walmart, just the whole idea that the lowest price is always best. Mm-hmm. That's the flip side of the coin of the bribery system. Mm-hmm. That we're, it's like a categorical, it's like a, just like the profit motive is a categorical imperative. Mm-hmm. Like in philosophy, that's where you say, it's like in Cabot, where you say there's an unquestionable motivation to do something. Mm-hmm. Is what we say, categorical imperative. The maximizing the profit margin in the United States is such a thing inside mm-hmm. of our system, inside that scope. Likewise, always finding the lowest price for the people is supposed to be what's programmed into us as a categorical mm-hmm. imperative. Mm-hmm. Like, no other questions asked.
Yeah.
If.
Yeah.
And but to say that, it's kind of like the same, like that reasoning though, by the same reasoning you would tell like every 17-year-old girl to just start being a prostitute because mm-hmm. she'll make the most money now doing it.
Yeah.
And she can get command high dollar. Mm-hmm. And why wouldn't she? Mm-hmm. Just because why not? Because yeah. that's just the most money. That trumps all the other reasons. The whole yeah. discussion is just yeah. shoved aside.
Yeah, and that's why companies go for slave labor. You know, that's mm-hmm. why they go for child labor and go for only paying somebody 15 cents is because that whole idea, it's like, oh, well, if I can do that, why would I want to pay someone exactly what they're worth, you know?
Or, like, sure, you can pay someone a low wage, but if you don't help them when they need to go to the doctor, you don't care if they live or die. Mm-hmm. So then that's the type of, if we're going to have, you know, so that's why, in regards to that obstacle, mm-hmm. I think that it's one of the noblest things that you can do to not be motivated by these, you know, the min-max of the profit, you know, mm-hmm. to pay a little bit more for something that's ethical, mm-hmm. I think is a very noble
yeah.
and highly justified thing to do because, mm-hmm. if nothing else, it strikes at the root
yeah.
of the issue here.
Right.
You know, people, that the price is not the only
right.
and all-trumping
right.
determiner in decision-making.
Yeah.
If we can keep hacking at that, you know, then mm-hmm. otherwise, you know, but to do that requires a lot of strength.
It does. It requires a lot of strength, and it requires a lot of getting rid of the idea of lack, because the idea of lack will just take over, you know, and you're just like, okay, you know, either I make more money somehow, so that I can afford to do ethical spending, you know, or
you're sucked into the system.
Yeah.
And yeah. you're just one of the people who, I don't have any choice.
Yeah.
And then and with all the ramifications that come with that, that you have no, whatever's in Walmart's shelves, you generally have no idea what pesticides went into
yeah.
it, what
that horrible
that was made.
That horrible act or law was passed saying that...
Oh, yeah. They can't label it.
They can't label...
And they're going to be able to import meat now from any place. That's a huge
yeah.
change. That could put out all of the ranching all across Missouri. You know, like, it could be totally horrible. Then you know there's, like, a, you know, all this shredded pork brought in by, you know, truckload from Argentina.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the other idea that's underneath all of that is just, well, they're trying to work.
Mm-hmm.
The system doesn't want you to know about, even think about the things like that,
mm-hmm.
how it was produced, what went into it,
yeah.
you know, what was it. Like, don't worry about it. It's like a Jedi mind trick. They want us to, mm-hmm. the price is all that matters.
Right.
You don't, you know.
Right.
If we had to kill 15 people to make this ham
mm-hmm.
hock.
Right.
That's none of your business.
Right.
It's not a win.
Right.
Which is absurd on its face, isn't it?
Yeah, it's ridiculous, and I think the best way to approach that problem is to kind of work on our own, like, individually work on our own ideas of what lack is, and understand that there is always a way, and to be really gentle with ourselves. You know, if we get frustrated and stressed out and we go get, you know, a refrigerator full of food from someplace super cheap that we don't know what's in the food. I mean, we're not gonna, we don't need to beat ourselves up, you know, but I mean, you know, just every once in a while, I guess we can just do what we can, you know. It's really important that we do what we can.
Mm-hmm. Be gentle. That's a good message, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if we, no one person can do it all. You can't have the world on your shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
There's, like what Noam Chomsky says, about personal responsibility. I'm primarily responsible for the foreseeable effects of my own actions.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily. Everything else to that is a secondary motivation.
Mm-hmm.
So the farrowing of cattle ranches in Argentina,
mm-hmm.
you know, is always going to be a little bit secondary to how mm-hmm. I treat the guy next door.
Right.
But I...
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to think, you know, this has been a really, really solid discussion. We've been able to get a lot of stuff out there, and I'll be really glad that this is posted too, because then, you know, a lot of the things I hardly ever get to talk about have come up,
mm-hmm.
and then, mm-hmm. but also, we have to come up with some kind of project that sums this all up.
Okay.